How does a good man become evil? Well, let me answer that question with some more questions. How does ego play into the role of a hero? If someone's doing the right thing for the wrong reasons, should they be praised? If you believe you're capable of helping somebody, how much control should you have over the situation that you're trying to help them with? Should you be blamed if, in an attempt to help, you only make the situation worse? Is power an inherently evil thing? These questions all sit at the core of Far Cry 2. It's a relatively simple game whose every nuance carries complicated and interesting implications. Now, I'm not just talking about the story here or the world building or anything. I'm talking about how those things play into what the game ultimately is, a series of hunts and firefights in the inherently entropic wilds of a war-torn Africa. I feel like we should start with the gameplay side of the coin. Specifically, how that gameplay creates a lot of thematic questions, and then move on to the story, which attempts to answer them. However, let's start with a little introduction to the world. Far Cry 3 famously parodied the infamous white savior trope, you know, the white guy who appears and manages to save a society that isn't his own from the brink of collapse. The big argument against this stuff is that the white lead character is just using the struggles of downtrodden people who they have no real relation to in order to elevate themselves. In Far Cry 3, Jason Brody, the whitest character in gaming, straight up becomes the chosen one of the Rakyat and becomes their most legendary warrior on the level of a demigod. The game constantly makes fun of him for this, making Jason out to be more of a psychopathic serial killer than anything actually aspirational, and poking fun at his nature as a fish out of water. But ultimately, Jason is still just the white guy that finally saves the Rakyat. It's satirical in that the whole thing is framed as something of a murder vacation in the Bahamas. One minute you're slitting a man's throat, the next you're racing ATVs through the jungle. It's a pretty ham-fisted commentary on colonialism and people's ability to dissociate themselves from their extremely cruel deeds, so long as they're far away from home. Jason is like the social media junkie who sees third world countries' struggles as nothing but fuel for their Twitter clout. Ultimately, it's a goofy, fun story in a goofy, fun game. Far Cry 2 also commentates on colonialism and people's ability to dissociate themselves from their cruel deeds so long as they're far away from home, only it doesn't do it in a funny way whatsoever. Far Cry 2 is a deeply disturbing game. Our character, at the beginning of the game, is tasked with taking down an arms dealer, the Jackal, who's considered largely responsible for much of Africa's civil war. Like Jason, our character is a foreigner on a murder vacation, given a license to kill and no personal stake in the future of Africa's people. Sure, he's on a mission here, but realistically, the people that he truly cares about back home won't ever be affected by anything he does here in Africa. He's free to go crazy. Consequences be damned. Africa be damned. Far Cry 2 has a lot of the same themes as Far Cry 3, but while that game was more about story tropes than human nature, this game is all about the darkest urges of man. It's about crossing the thin line between good intentions and horrific deeds. So, let's get into how it portrays this. So, first off, and you might consider this a weird place to start, is the fire. Far Cry 2 is perhaps most famous for its revolutionary fire propagation system, which I still consider to be unmatched. Fires spread realistically with the wind, the grass, the foliage, and all sorts of other things. A burning branch from a burning tree can sail across the breeze and light a building on fire, which might trigger a chain reaction into a cache of bullets, sending random rounds flying in every direction. One might strike a gas line and cause a gigantic explosion that lights a car's gas tank ablaze, and... well, this is the sort of thing that happens a lot in Far Cry 2. The entropic decay of our character's intentions towards Africa runs parallel to the entropic chaos of firefights in the game. You start out almost every enemy encounter with a simple plan. Okay, I'll shoot this guy, then throw a grenade into that building, then I'll take cover over here and pick off the stragglers. It should be a pretty clean operation, but nothing in Far Cry 2 ever goes as planned. You'd be hard-pressed to handle any situation in this game in a way that doesn't just end with the environment completely ravaged by flames. If something catches on fire, and it always will, you can almost guarantee that that fire is going to affect everything you do until you leave the area. The chaotic systems of this game offer a million opportunities to get creative, but actually trying to capitalize on those opportunities almost never goes the way you hoped. Maybe you want to use a big mounted gun to mow down some branches to give yourself a good sniping sightline into an enemy camp. Well, the enemies will hear that and take cover or advance on your position, and next thing you know, you're ducked beside your car, hoping to God that you have enough bullets to get them off your back long enough for you to just run away and recuperate. Maybe you've only got a single grenade and 4 or 5 bullets left, and you're trying to raid an enemy camp for ammo. Well, you throw the grenade to try and cause enough panic for you to slip in, grab the ammo, and get out. But by the time you get to the ammo cache, a chain reaction has started, and those bullets you wanted so badly were all fired violently in every direction, probably killing a couple people in the process. Maybe you're hiding behind a rock in the grass, getting ready to fire a recoilless rifle at a car you intend to destroy. Well, a second car shows up, and you go to take cover behind your rock, only to realize that the backblast from your RPG has set the grass on fire, effectively nullifying the one safe place you had to your advantage. Hell, maybe you've finished off an enemy camp and have started scavenging for supplies, only to hear a faint panting, and you know that someone, somewhere, is still clinging onto their life long enough to try and get their revenge. At points like this, you've started out with a plan that seemed good enough on paper, but through the raw chaos of combustion-based weaponry, your plan was twisted to the point where the only thing that matters is just trying to make it out alive to lick your wounds. So the only option is to just get more and more cunning and more brutal. You start to drift away from wild RPG rampages and move more towards calmly laying down mortar fire on an enemy camp from a few hundred yards away. You want to go out at daytime and aim for the shady spots, since that's where all the enemies will be hanging out, trying to stay out of the sun. You start to move away from flamethrowers and get more into sniping. One effective strategy is to shoot some poor bastard in the leg and wait for his friends to leave their cover to rescue him, and then pick them off screaming one by one until all the brave ones have been killed. Hell, if you're good enough, you might even manage to pull off a few honest-to-God stealth infiltrations, dispassionately putting your subsonic 9 up to the back of people's heads and just turning them off during their few moments of relaxation between duties. In these cases, you shouldn't even go for the more intimate machete kills. Sure, they're guaranteed to be lethal, and they're easier than hitting clean headshots every time, but they're too risky. Enemies often scream, alerting the whole camp. Other times, they'll just hear your footsteps, and it's all over. Short-term, firefights turn from meticulously planned attacks to chaotic struggles just to survive, objectives be damned. Long-term, you slowly learn to treat your enemies with less and less compassion. You dehumanize them, giving them less and less dignified deaths for the sake of taking care of numero uno, because somewhere towards the beginning of your visit to Africa, your intentions were a bit more pure, and something somewhat worthwhile was at the core of all of it. This is where some of those questions from the beginning of the video start being asked. If you were just better at the game, could you control this chaos and do things more cleanly and humanely? If the answer is yes, then is there still at least some ethical merit to sending someone as sloppy as you to do this job? And if the answer is no, should anybody have any sort of power to contribute to the entropy and chaos that surrounds you? Is power an inherently evil thing? Just why are we doing all this? Do the ends truly justify the means? Is our struggle for survival more a product of ego, or of genuine compassion for the people you were supposed to be saving? Well, this story helps further those questions, and even gives them some answers, although they are somewhat open-ended answers. With that, I think it's time that we take a look at that story for a bit. Don't worry, I have a lot more to say about the gameplay, but I'll save that for a bit later. I think you'll find that the flow and the concepts of the story line up incredibly tightly with the ideas that this gameplay invokes. So, again, we were sent here to take out an arms dealer called the Jackal, who's blamed for sparking civil wars all over the world, no different than the one that's ravaging this region. Well, within minutes of our arrival on one of the last flights into or out of the region, we're unlucky enough to contract malaria from a mosquito bite. I have a lot to say about malaria's role in this game, but for now, let's just say that we pass out and wake up in the middle of a disrupted safe zone. The Jackal confronts us in our bed, telling us that we've failed our mission and that we'll never see him again. We escape the city and are immediately put to work by some practically nameless faction at threat of our death. From this moment on, we begin our short new life as a scumbag mercenary caught in the middle of this meaningless war. Our goal in all of this is to get closer to the higher-ups, just to get a chance at picking up on the Jackal's trail again, and so we whore ourselves out to these rivaling factions, destroying morphine shipments, assassinating officers who are no worse than the people who are paying us, spreading lies to spark violence against UN inspectors, burning crops, sparking firefights in ceasefire zones, and ultimately just using pain, cruelty, and apathy to fan the flames of war. We fight for both sides, desperately hoping for some clue as to the Jackal's whereabouts, but ultimately we play directly into his hand. We make the Civil War more and more violent, and as a result, we increase the demand for weapons. Weapons sold by the very man we were supposed to be assassinating. The threat of a quick and inevitable death by malaria means that we don't have time to take a more nuanced approach to finding the Jackal. We have only a few short weeks to live, and so we'll use any means necessary to get to this guy's throat. By the end of the game, it's so clear that we're, at best, just as bad as the Jackal. We've killed so many people, we've destroyed so much hope for the civilians and refugees. So the Jackal and the player work together in a suicidal mission to get a group of refugees out of the country and die with some sort of dignity in the arms of a mangled thing that was once called our humanity. This is where we get into the concept of ego. See, any logical person would say that once the Jackal learns about your mission and you're stuck with a couple weeks of a life ruled by malaria followed by death, it was time to just throw in the towel. Surely whoever hired you for this job will just send someone else who might have better luck. But because of the player character's ego, he pushes on with his mission. He thinks that he's the man for the job. He's the one who knows best how to save this region that he's only ever seen in photographs and news reports before this point. He's the one who should get to decide who lives and who dies. He's in a situation where he's lost everything. He's going to die of malaria, far away from home in this country that he has no real connection to. So his ego demands that he shape the region in his image before he goes out. When faced with certain death and no consequences for his loved ones back home, the logical side of our protagonist's brain goes out the window, and his ego takes over. This is exactly what the Jackal tried to warn us about in the beginning of the game.
I'm the one who decides who lives and who dies. Me. You know, there's a book I read a long time ago. Still think about it every day. It helps me understand life out here. The book talks about men, but what motivates them? Simple, really. A living being seeks above all else to discharge its strength. Life itself is will to power. Nothing else matters.
The Jackal knows as well as anybody how the ego can influence somebody to do things that seem illogical. He understands that ego can rationalize anything you do in the name of self-prominence.
I'm doing what men have been doing for thousands of years, trading one thing for another. If it's you who wants to attach morality to it, make it evil. Insane.
The Jackal is fully aware that even this speech at the beginning of the game was just his own ego speaking. When you're faced with certain death, logic isn't of much use to you. Ego becomes the only thing that you have left. And with that, I think we can talk about what the ego is fighting against here. The Earth, and how little it cares for this civil war that a bunch of humans are fighting somewhere on top of it. See, I think we've all had that moment when we've realized that the universe doesn't care about what we do. It's a real shock to the ego to know that nothing you ever do will ever impact the world beyond what we can see here on this little ball. Well, our protagonist goes through something similar at the beginning of this game. It's what snaps his logical side and forces his ego to fight back against the blow. Malaria. We were sent here to save countless lives from wars that had yet to be sparked, but Earth couldn't care less about that. Through pure bad luck, completely random chance, our righteous mission was cut short by a single mosquito. It, and the Earth that sent it, would never recognize our sentience. In Earth's eyes, Africa's eyes, and that mosquito's eyes, we're nothing, and so the ego needs to bolster itself against the shock of a revelation. You're going to die, and your killer won't ever consider or even care that you were ever alive to begin with. It's frankly a one-of-a-kind experience in gaming to navigate Far Cry 2's world. Those long treks between all the killing imply so much about the doomsday situation that our character is in. No matter what happens, no matter how many people you kill, how many bones you break, how many friends you watch die, the sunrise is still beautiful on some days, and the skies are blotted with miserable storm clouds on other days. The bushes that conceal you as you creep along a road towards an objective can and will conceal an enemy just as quickly. Sometimes an outcropping will be an incredibly helpful sniping point, other times it's a dead end, forcing you to either kill whoever's going after you or jump, hoping you can somehow survive the landing. We see these small pockets of human influence, managing to withstand the inevitable decay of all structure for the time being, and they're completely overshadowed by the vastness of wilderness between them. The Earth, and its spirit of entropy, leads to weapons that are nigh unusable. Guns jam, RPG rounds misfire, grenade launchers shoot duds, the sun glares on your scope, making it completely unusable. Just as the Earth is able to destroy you and everything you are with a single mosquito, it's able to destroy all of these guns, these camps, these cities, all of it. Even people are biodegradable. If we pollute the Earth to the point where it becomes uninhabitable, us humans are done for, but the Earth will just keep on chugging along without us, totally aware that we ever existed to marvel at its beauty. Through this, that beauty becomes opposition. Like a high school crush that just wouldn't notice you no matter what you did. Those beautiful sunrises spent waiting on a rock for a targeted convoy to come driving your way become little more than a reminder of your own significance, and another call to your ego to fight against it, to do whatever it takes and kill whoever you have to in order to become significant. Even at the end of the game, when our character kills himself to help refugees escape the country, it's hard to see this as anything but an egotistical action on the part of an already doomed protagonist, one last bloody masturbation before the sun rises over your corpse. How does ego play into the role of a hero? If somebody is doing the right thing for the wrong reasons, should they be praised? If you believe you're capable of helping someone, how much control should you have over the situation that you're trying to help them with? Should you be blamed if, in an attempt to help, you only make the situation worse? Is power an inherently evil thing? These are the questions that Far Cry 2 asks, and its answers are all totally open-ended. Is our protagonist a good person? No, not at all. He isn't a hero. The most righteous thing he does is rid the world of his own cancer. But, like the player, he started with good intentions. However, when faced with the revelation that Earth didn't care at all if he was a hero or a villain, alive or dead, he dedicated himself to projecting his power and his ideals onto people who he'd never met and never lived amongst. How does a good man become evil? Well, it all starts with an ego challenged by an uncaring world.
Quay người ở giam băng. Giai mi giam xăm măng gái.
Before I close out today's video, I'd just like to take a moment to verbally thank my patrons, especially those who are donating $10 or more monthly, such as Ada Avery, Almost Dead Again, Amy Marshall, Anatoly Volnov, Askel, Atheot, Big Time Jim, Calliope Ranis, Char Litt, Shun Gina, Colin Gajic, Cornelius Nelson, Darius Fazier, Demise, Dennis Valshakamer, Dominic Johan, Eduardo Roca, Emma Plays Go, Fluffy Puppy Casey, George Rosenbaum, Holly Schmidt, I. Cashern, IJK, Joannis, Joit, Jonah Shee, Jonas, JP, K, Kenneth Endfinger, Knife, Laffy, Legally Graphic, Lil Bunda, Lilith Vampas Hibiscus, Liv, Luz M, Madison Crater, Megan Walker, Mia Mako, Neurofilter, Nicole, Of Lucian, Poof Donut, Praxibetal, Raxvan, Robert Botang, CeeLo, Shano, Yas the Boss, Zoe, and Zyrobly. I can't say for certain how many more of these video game based videos I'm going to be making, but I just want everyone to know that while I do make these last few videos, mostly remakes of my old stuff, I'm going to try to make them just some of the best videos I've ever made. I really want to end this chapter of my channel with a bang, so I hope you guys all enjoy the stuff I've got in store. Thank you.